I'm gonna dip this potato in some crushed Vicodin. Nobody can stop me.
Potatoes, 3 potatoes, 4, 5 potatoes, 6 potatoes, 7 potatoes, more. 1 potato, 2 potatoes, 3 potatoes, 4, 5 potatoes, 6 potatoes, 7 potatoes, more.
Welcome to the Potato Week Podcast with your host, Dan Fleming and Tom Crosman.
Thanks, TJ.
Thank you, TJ.
I was super stealthy getting up and going to get that pen. I was trying to be super quiet because the mic's right there, and it's just like, creep, creep. And probably no one noticed it.
It just makes it real.
But I did. welcome to episode 135, I think.
Yes.
Of Potato League Podcast. I'm Tom, sitting here with Dan.
Hello.
As usual, Brother Goose is here. He's out working hard on the loft for us.
So Brother Goose came to my rescue yesterday.
I heard that. See, yeah. Here's a funny thing. Last night, our old friends, Adam and Alicia Harmon and their kids came over, for dinner. So we were all here, Ryan was here, and they were all talking about stuff. This thing of me deleting Facebook, it's weird.
It keeps you out of the loop, man.
It does, because people will start talking about stuff.
Yeah.
And everyone else knows about it, and I'm like, what are you guys? I mean, they're talking about a fucking house that blew up in Milo.
Yes.
I had no idea that happened.
Yeah.
Apparently, and I was sitting right where I am right now when it happened.
Apparently, it rocked Val's place.
Yeah.
Val posted, like, I just felt my building move.
Adam heard it. Do you know where Adam lives? He lives on the other side of the hill from where you grew up. He lives on the Brownville side of Sweat Hill.
No
and
shit.
He heard it from his house.
And it was on the Perry Road.
Yes.
Fuck.
That's like, if you're not from Milo, that is miles, four or five miles
yeah, I mean,
away.
Milo's a quiet town.
Sure.
It's not like there's a lot of booming going on. There's not like the plains of Bangor
flying over
all the time, but wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a total, I mean, it's on one extreme to the other for the town, and he heard it from his house. I was sitting, and geographically, if you're wondering, I am right in dead center of town, so I definitely should have heard it. I was sitting right where I am right now.
Well,
although I may have been watching Honest or Fucking God Saving Private Ryan at that point, so
could have just blended right in.
Yeah, I could.
No, I don't. Yeah, just blended right in. Yeah, and is it sad that the first thing I immediately thought of when I heard explosion house pair road, I went meth lab.
Yeah, me too. But apparently, not to besmirch anyone.
I heard no names attached.
Right.
To
well,
it.
The Alicia knows the people that have the house, and she said they're like super nice, super straight arrow type people. So that is highly unlikely. But that is absolutely the first thing I thought.
Yeah. Because the Perry Road isn't, you know, a populated area.
Right.
Very much.
Well, it's a perfect place for a meth lab.
Yeah.
Well, if there is a perfect place for a meth lab, that's...
Milo has a few.
Yeah.
Milo
there's a lot of
a
perfect
few.
Places, and they're well-utilized.
Yes.
Glad
to hear it wasn't a meth lab explosion.
Yeah.
Especially because when I heard people were taken to the hospital for slight burns. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, apparently...
I mean, house explodes, you're probably going to get some burns. But.
Apparently, it was it had something to do with propane, and also, they had just moved into that house like a week ago, so I wonder if there's some liability on a gas company. I don't know. I do not know
an inspector or something.
Yeah, where someone hooked a line up wrong or something, and
yikes. Because it's not. Yeah,
I haven't seen the pictures, but I guess the house is flattened.
Oh yeah, like, yeah. I saw a picture on Facebook.
That's
was
wild.
Leveled.
Wild.
Yeah.
Anyway, we shouldn't dawdle because I haven't used dawdle in a while.
No. We've got a good time. I mean, it's 12:22.
Right. So the plan is today we're going to do the split recordings. We may do that throughout football season.
It's not a bad idea.
It's not.
It's not.
It also splits
it
up into...
It rejuvenates us.
Well, it also... I realize that there are people who don't care about one side or the other, one topic or the other, and that's totally cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, splitting them up when we know we're going to talk a lot about sports or whatever, then I think that's the way to go. But what we're going to do, so that what I'm saying is the Fantasy Football League draft is today at 2:00. If you're hearing this and you forgot, it's too late because I have not uploaded this episode by the time the draft starts. sometimes I kind of, I don't know if you do it too, but sometimes I get into the mindset that we're live.
Oh yeah.
And then you're like, wait a second, whoever's listening to this is listening to it like 4 days from now, or at best tonight, you know, so like, you know.
Yeah, no, because that happens every once in a while where someone, like, I'll get home and, like I know our buddy, my buddy Matt, will sometimes, like, we'll listen to it that night.
Yeah.
And, like, he'll text me something, and I'm like, how did you fucking listen to this already, man? Like, cool.
Well,
I'm glad you listened, like, right after, but...
I often listen to... Not that this matters in this context, but I often will listen to the night. I'm usually the first download, well, yeah. Obviously, because I'm the one that does it. And I'll listen to like 10 minutes at the beginning, 10 minutes in the middle, 10 minutes at the end, yeah, usually.
Check the quality.
Yeah.
Quality assurance.
Right.
At its best.
And it's not just because I like rehearing the sound of my own voice for words that I just said two hours ago. But, so we're going to do, we kind of fell into a topic this week, because it's harvest week for me, or a harvest week for mm-hmm. me. So I put on, and also it was a huge week in, national news.
Yeah.
Like.
Shit went down.
Crazy news week. Yeah. Was it Tuesday? Tuesday was probably the
Tuesday
most...
was indictment day.
Yeah, that's
not indictment
the most...
day, conviction day.
Probably the biggest Tuesday news day since September 11th, 2001.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you could not escape a news feed without...
I don't
like seeing that.
I don't think we're not going to belabor this because again we don't have much time. But you cannot understate the fact that the President of the United States' personal attorney
mm-hmm.
named him, not named him,
for all intents
named
and purposes,
him,
named him
under oath in a court of law and accused him of a crime.
Yeah.
That is
he ordered me to do this.
Right.
Yes.
The President of the United States ordered me to commit this crime, which obviously is a crime.
Mm-hmm.
That is extraordinary. Yeah. I don't think... news is batshit every day since Donald Trump. So we have a way of desensitizing, but I just want to make clear how extraordinary that is.
And not just that, on the same day, his campaign, his campaign lead got convicted of... Eight out of 18,
and the other 10 were one juror was holding out, and the rest of them were all like, dude, you're fucking crazy. This evidence is overwhelming. So if the government wants to go back, it is a likely slam dunk. He's got way bigger problems in Virginia.
Yeah, exactly. He's still got another state case coming up.
Yeah, that's another federal, but he's mm-hmm. got, they could tie it to state mm-hmm. For tax stuff. The kids are in trouble.
Yeah, with the state of New York.
With the state of New York. That's the big one.
Yeah.
Because...
federal party.
They fucked up. I don't think they realized what... They were all happy when Eric Schneiderman turned out to be a dirtbag and he got fired.
Yeah.
Because he was the one coming after Trump. And the little unassuming old lady that they put in his place is a fucking mad dog.
Yeah, she's a bulldog. Yeah.
She...
And they can't...
Like, day one, she was, like, cranking shit out to and insulating her and making sure that it was, like, an untouchable investigation.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Because with Schneiderman, they could have said, he's a dirt... If they kept him in, they could have said, he's a dirtbag.
Right.
He's, he's got ulterior motives. He's deep state.
Yeah.
Whereas this lady, it's just like, oh, fuck, we just unleashed fucking grandma.
And her... I don't know if you've seen her resume.
Yeah.
It's crazy. She has... she is... very qualified.
Yeah.
And she, like, filed stuff. She's very smart. She filed civil cases first so that there would be a court record of stuff that can be reintroduced in a criminal case. Mm-hmm. It's like, look, this was a court of law. These are the facts that came out here. Mm-hmm. It's... The kids are... I think the kids are fucked.
Yeah.
And I'll be very curious, because I don't think Trump cares. Or not that he doesn't care.
Oh, that's what everybody keeps saying. Everybody's like, oh, this will get him to step down, because he'll step down in exchange for leniency. No, he fucking won't.
I think he... Maybe
he has never given a fuck about these kids.
Maybe Ivanka, but just because he wants to bang her. But he doesn't give a fuck if Don Jr. goes to prison. He will he will happily live on an island by himself, surrounded by 12-year-old Thai girls, mm-hmm. before going to prison for Don Jr.
Yeah.
And fuck Eric.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, guys.
If it was like, Mr. Trump, you can, your son Eric can go to jail, or you can just shoot him in the head and you can go free, he would shoot Eric in the head.
Well, he would.
Eric would be
a dead man. He'd pay someone off to do it.
Yeah, he wouldn't want to be anywhere near it. Yeah, I've read more and more, and I've said
this
before.
He would pay someone off who was desperately unqualified to do it.
I've said this before on here. One of the things that really amazes me about people that are hardcore Trump supporters is that they think he's some kind of tough guy. He is a fucking coward.
Oh, yeah.
He won't even stand up to Jeff Sessions in face. Face to face.
I know.
He talks shit about him on
Keebler
Twitter.
The elf of, yes, the, of like the prior Senate.
Right. So the keyboard warrior will tweet out all this stuff about Jeff Sessions. He met with him that afternoon and never said a fucking word.
Yeah.
What a pussy.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff Sessions is about as intimidating as...
Yeah, Tilly.
I was going to say Tilly, but Tilly's more intimidating.
I would be more
afraid
of Tilly, I think.
Yes.
Tilly's less likely to wear a KKK robe, but,
yes,
you know. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like... And,
I hope so.
And I think in Sessions now is, like, speaking out.
Yeah, like, no, well, I think it's at some point even... and look, Jeff Sessions is a fucking dirtbag.
Oh, yeah.
But at some point, I think... people have enough of this shit. You know, at some point, and this is, it's starting. The people that have, the one that's really going to fuck him is David Pecker. I know.
Did you see
Leaky
that?
Pecker?
Trump worried about Leaky Pecker.
Pecker?
Someone somewhere has been waiting forever.
Fuck, yeah, they've been just hand on the fucking button hovering right over the send thing. The tweet's already been written. Yes.
Yeah.
Or the Chevron writer, the Chiron writer at CNN was like, come on!
Yeah, just had it preloaded. Just
F8. Quick. It was like a soundboard. Boom. Yeah, him and Weisselberg, Alan Weisselberg is a huge one. Because when you get, and every federal prosecutor that's been on the news this week has said, when you get the CFO, it's not to go after the guy's lawyer.
Yeah.
If you get the CFO, you're going after the CEO. Yeah,
he's the person to follow the money on.
Yeah.
Because he knows where all of it is. Yeah.
He's also going to be able to testify to the fact that Trump knew where everything was going too, because he was a micromanager.
And that was the other thing that I read. It's like, you don't give complete blanket immunity,
right,
unless that guy's got everything you want.
Yeah, you get a plea deal to, you know, a mediocre plea deal for just saving the expense of not having a trial. You get a good plea deal if you're cooperating. Mm. You get immunity if you've got some serious shit.
You can provide the case.
Yeah, and not just, I saw this, I heard this. It's, here's the documents, fellas. Yeah,
here's the signed documents, here's the emails, here's everything.
Here's recordings.
Yeah.
This is... I know that people have said it a million times. I think that this Tuesday was truly the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
I'm still... I don't know what I thought. I don't remember what because of the ways that he will leave office. I can't remember what was leading in my head, but I still don't think he'll resign. I think he's too stupid for that. There's not going to be 60. Well, maybe there will be. If it gets ridiculous, there will be 67 senators willing to vote, but.
Well, people are going to start abandoning at some point. It has to happen.
Well, it's happening. It's happening
I mean,
now.
Especially considering I was reading this thing where, like, somebody somewhere, I can't remember which article I read, but they were like, somebody's got something on McConnell. Because McConnell's very quiet of late.
I think so, too. Same with Lindsey Graham, because he changed his tune very recently.
They've been keeping their head down.
Yeah. In a time where you would think that especially with Lindsey Graham, because Lindsey Graham has been critical of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
You would think at this time he'd be distancing even more, but now he's backtracking. So I feel like...
Yeah, because he was just calling for Sessions to be replaced like a week ago, and is all of a sudden now like... Mm.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, it's... I don't know. So anyway, what we kind of fell into for a topic this week was at the end of this week, I texted Dan and I said, I don't know if I should end my week with All the President's Men or Godfather 2. And Dan texted back, well, they haven't put Fredo in the boat yet. So watch All the President's Men. So I did.
And then we had to figure out which one was fucking
Fredo. Yeah, and then it's like, that's where you run into the problem. It's like, fuck, they're all Fredo.
Yeah, it's a criminal organization where everyone is Fredo.
Right, everyone is the dumb one.
I'm smart. Everybody thinks.
Well, we've got Godfather 2 on mute here as it's running.
We get to that scene, because I was actually thinking about, like this is... Because, like, I have my favorite scene from Godfather, and I'm like, what would be my favorite scene from Godfather 2? Because there's a lot of them, and I'm like, no, that fucking Fredo scene in the boathouse.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, you know, where he's complaining that they passed him over.
Right.
I'm like, fucking A. Jim Caziel nailed that.
Yeah.
Nailed.
And then died.
And then dies.
I actually was looking through, because I was, you know, flipping around last night.
Spoiler for The Godfather 2.
I mean the actor.
Yeah, well.
he was, like, only in these, like...
He was in five films, and five of which were nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, and they're all classics. And he was,
Let me see. Godfather, Godfather 2, Dog Day Afternoon, I think The Conversation, and Deer Hunter.
Yes.
Yeah, he was in five fucking films.
Yeah.
And then died.
At our age.
Yeah, at our age. And was with Meryl Streep.
He was?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, that was like his lady friend towards the end there. So, you know, game recognizes game.
The scene just passed where Michael hands over power to Tom, and he's like, you know, Fredo's my brother, but he's weak and he's stupid. That's Eric.
Yeah. Well,
and Don Jr. You know who the smartest one is? Tiffany.
Yeah, because she stays out.
Because she stays the fuck out
and
of the way.
And she's the one that looks the dumbest.
Yes,
she looks like typical fucking Girls Gone Wild material.
Yes.
But yeah, she stays out of everything.
Yeah. So it just ended up happening that us texting back and forth over the next day or so that we basically just watched like three or four of the five or six greatest movies of all time.
And it worked out perfectly for me because this is how Goose had to come to my rescue. I had a ton of shit planned for yesterday morning.
Sure.
I was going to go do this.
Like a
to-do
list?
Yeah, I had a to-do list of shit to do, and I walk out, and my fucking tire is flat.
Yep.
And I was pissed off, because it's three-week-old tires, and one of them should not be flat.
Well, what I was saying to Ryan is, because again, this is something I knew nothing about until they were talking about it last night. Because Alicia said, how's Dan's tire? Or something like that. I'm like, the fuck are you guys talking about? I was thinking, well, because I've had issues like that, and 3 weeks after is about right if it's not seated right.
That's what it was. It was the interior seal had popped off a little bit, and it had slowly for about the past week because it looked a little low when I got home Friday night. So I was like, okay, I'll just go put some air in it tomorrow.
If you put gas in it, it will not work out.
No.
I went to put gas in it.
No, I will then have an explosion.
That'd be awesome.
So I went to take the tire off. And one of the lug nuts they replaced when they put the new tire on, when they put all my four new tires on, because they had to strip one of the lug nuts off to get it off. The diameter was thicker, was wider than my whatever the fuck they're called,
lug wrench.
Yeah, so I only had a one way one. So I'm like, well, fuck, I can get four out of the five off.
Yeah,
but not the fifth because they put a wrong size one on. So Goose luckily came over, pumped the tire up, wasn't leaking enough so that we were too worried. He left the pump and his four-way with me.
Yep.
But, yeah, by the time it was like 1 in the afternoon by the time that was all done. So I'm like, well, fuck it. I don't want to do anything now.
No, God.
So
no.
I just went
inside. Not at 1. I mean, the day's almost over.
Yeah. At 1 o'clock, my day's over. I mean, I was still cleaning. I was going, I cleaned a bunch of my apartment. I was doing one of my usual time to clean everything type of things.
Sure.
And I just put on The Godfather.
Yeah.
I see the trilogy, but I did not watch 3.
No.
So.
Nope.
But I just watched that while cleaning my apartment all day.
Yeah. So I ended up watching Godfather, All the President's Men, Saving Private Ryan, and then, like, I don't know, maybe a quarter of the way through Godfather 2 here. And I was trying to think of... because it is a weird thing when you say, like, what's your favorite movie versus, like... It's hard to put, like, The Godfather and, like, Thor Ragnarok into the same group.
yes.
It's
both
almost
enjoyable,
like,
but for countless different reasons.
Well, it's like, and you can't even, like, put them on the same list, you know what I mean? It's almost like I have this favorite group of, like, all-time great movies, and then there's, like, my favorite popcorn-type movies.
Yeah.
As far as all-time favorite, like, you know, movies like The Godfather and Saving Private Ryan. I was trying to think of what else I would even put into like a top five-ish type thing. If you just count The Godfather movies as one movie. Just count it as one six-hour movie.
Which I don't, actually, oddly enough. Because...
I understand that.
I am one of those rare people who I love The Godfather way more than I love Part 2.
Oh, me too. Oh, it's but not
there
even close.
But there are people like Godfather 2 is the best film of all time. And I'm like, I get why you say that, because it's brilliant.
Well, there's two reasons.
It is still not as good. I'm sorry, it's not as good as the
first. It doesn't have... The two things that I love most about The Godfather are not in Godfather 2, and that is Sonny and Vito.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really all there is to it.
I think there's a better character arc too, because Michael starts out as just
that, exactly.
Yeah,
because the so The Godfather is a like a transitioning movie, like watching a person a turn.
Exactly.
It's his Breaking Bad. The Godfather 2 is a father son. That's more of a like it's a. You know, splitting up the movie that way with, you know, a father and a son at the same age. There's countless interviews of Coppola saying that he always wanted to do something like that. And that's why they split up the novel. Because the novel is chronological.
Yeah.
Have you read the novel?
Yes.
Yeah.
Long, long ago. But
yes.
Not nearly as good as the films.
No.
It's one of those it's one of the few cases where the movie is a ton better than the book.
The book
is fine.
The book is... The good thing about the book is that you get more... There are people that are named once in the movies that are... explained at length in the books, like a lot of the old bosses back in Sicily stuff.
Yeah,
they get explained a lot. They're a lot more fleshed out in the book, and a lot of his earlier New York days stuff is fleshed out a lot more. But yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I always had the feeling that the conventional wisdom was that 2 was the better movie,
that
and
is
I always
conventional
thought,
wisdom.
And I was like, no, it's
nope,
not.
I will
one
argue
is better.
That point with everybody every time because.
Well, I was going to ask you if you think that that's changed, because I think that the reason that people... the reason that people always thought 2 was better is that, especially, you know, 15, 20 years ago, was that De Niro was super hot and it was super cool to like De Niro, and De Niro's in 2.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's more ambitious.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's over 3 hours long.
Right.
It tells the two storylines... that do a wonderful job of intermingling.
I watched the thing, one of the special features last night, I was watching it, and they, the original cut, they went back and forth a lot more, and everyone hated it.
Yeah.
So then, because it is, usually when you see stuff like that, there is a, you know, a bouncing back and forth, but they stay in one place for 40, 50 minutes at a time.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's another...
You can do that in a 3.5-hour movie.
There's another cut out there that was available on home video for a while called, like, The Godfather Saga, where it took the first 3 films and put them all in order.
Yeah, it was, I think originally it was AMC or something like that did that, and then it, because I remember it being...
Because I was very disappointed that wasn't a special feature on the box set, because I'm like, why would you not include that to give me another option of viewing it?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
You've got the space. It's a Blu-ray. Come
right.
on.
Because
I've only seen it once that way, because it was one of those things where I saw it once, and then I had to question myself on whether or not I dreamt it.
Sure.
Because it's one of those things like where only like cinephiles had ever seen that.
Right.
And it's not something you saw frequently, like at a video store or a movie store, so it was like, did I dream that I saw that differently?
I remember it was a big deal.
So it was one of those things like with Superman, where the TV cut had additional scenes in it.
And I don't remember if it was AM, I mean, could have been whatever network, but it was like... it was a big deal because it was all day. They advertised for a month. You know, it's all day Saturday is fucking. Yep. We're starting in 1901 and going from there. So I didn't. I was gonna. I was trying to think of if I was gonna add other. What else I would add to like a top 5-ish type.
I actually have on my phone like an ongoing top 50 that I keep.
Of course you do. Why not?
Yeah, so I've got some good stuff that I think will add to this, but yeah, like Michael Corleone, while he's good in The Godfather 2, he's the same devious fuck the entire time.
Exactly.
It's not.
There's no arc for him.
Yeah, I love that. Like the first time you meet Michael in the first movie, it's at the wedding where he's talking with Kay, and he's just being a genuinely decent human being.
And he's in a uniform, the respected war hero coming back.
Exactly. Then you've got the scene with Sollozzo in the restaurant where he kills him and the cop. And it's like, ooh, that's the turn.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then you see him try to regain
some... fire him up until then.
Yeah, and then you see an attempted sense of normalcy while he's back in Italy with Apollonia.
Apollonia.
Yeah. You were too beautiful for this world, Apollonia. Yep. And then, yeah. When
don't sleep on Kay.
No.
And, deep cut, don't sleep on Mama Corleone.
Mm-hmm.
Mama Corleone's got it going on.
Yeah.
I don't care how old she is.
Mm-hmm. No, and watching it yesterday, I was struck by another scene where when Michael meets Kay again after coming back.
Right.
And she's like, "How did you just get back?" And he's like, "No, I've been back a year. And
They talk about that. In the, I think it was in one of the things I was watching last night. They were talking about how it was edited. And it was Spielberg actually talking. He said, that was a very brave move to be like, all right, it's been a year.
Yeah.
You know, like you got
timeline wise, it's like you just saw him in Italy.
Right.
Now you see him back.
Right.
Okay, he just got back. And you expect him to say, I just got back, Kay. And I can't. No, that fucker's been here for a year.
Right.
What made him come back to Kay now?
Right.
I mean, Kay becomes such a sympathetic character over the course of these movies. It's like, you know, she just fell in love with a soldier boy. And now, you know. I mean, the very last shot of The Godfather is one of the most iconic shots.
That's my favorite. I do it to Robin all the time.
Yeah. Just the door.
Yeah.
You at home can't see me miming the door shutting.
No, but I watched the last 15 seconds three times when I watched it the other day.
That fucking shot. Every time. And that's when that film is filled with just film school shots.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there are so many scenes I was thinking about. Like, one of the scenes that I was, like, perseverating on yesterday that I don't really... was the scene with Sollozzo and Tom Hagen.
Yeah.
When they're just having that conversation about, you know, in the car, but the one where they were in the darkened room where they were both kind of half-lit gorgeously.
Right.
I'm like, Jesus, this is a scene.
Yeah.
You're just two guys talking, and it's got so much more going on than it does.
I never noticed, and again, I just thought of it when you were... because there's a lot of good... The Godfather is filled... Both movies are filled with... excellent conversations in dimly lit rooms. And I was just thinking about the beginning of two, at his son's christening, which is sort of, you know, kind of along the same lines as the wedding, from the first one. The guy from Miami brings him an orange and he refuses it.
Yeah.
I never noticed that before. Oh, yeah.
It's funny how oranges play such a part.
Because, and if you don't know, in the first one, every time you see an orange, something bad's about to happen. Vito is getting oranges when he gets shot the first time, and he's got an orange. He's
in his mouth with his grandson.
Yeah, he's messing around with his grandson when he dies. So then in two, when someone offers Michael an orange, he just holds it for a second and gives it back to him.
Yeah.
I thought that was... I never noticed that.
In the film, when it goes back to one of the first De Niro scenes, when he's first starting to become the Godfather, he goes to a fruit stand and picks up some oranges.
I never noticed that. See, the thing is...
There's so many little things!
The thing is, I've seen one... three, four, five times more than I've... Like, I've probably seen the first one, I don't know, 20 times, and I've seen two, like, four times, maybe.
Yeah.
I just don't watch it as much.
Oh, I'm well into the 20s on both.
Yeah.
Well, because, again, it was one of those things when I didn't have cable when I was, like, 21.
Yeah.
I had a box of, like, 20 VHS tapes that I watched frequently, and Godfather was one of them.
Well, one I used to do, that's what I went to sleep to. Put the VHS tape in, because it was two discs. It was two tapes, so I would pop a tape in, and... Mm-hmm. The next night I'd pop the other tape, and that's how I went to sleep for like a whole summer.
Yeah.
I've dreamt Godfather.
Oh yeah.
I just don't watch two.
Coppola's films. I've done that with a lot of them because the conversation super easy to fall asleep to the conversation.
Yes.
That film's so fucking quiet.
Yeah. Even Apocalypse Now will lull you to sleep.
Apocalypse Now was a very long time falling asleep movie for, which made many people. A little weirded out by me.
That's like, a little weird.
They're like, why are you watching Apocalypse Now to fall asleep? I'm like, because it soothes me.
Well,
they massacre this.
I've tried to watch the super long one, I've fallen asleep.
I can't do... That is one of the cases of a director and an editor saving their ass for the original picture.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because like the original cut is still one of my favorite things ever. And I love the scenes, the added scenes.
Yeah.
I don't like them added back into the movie because it... fucks with everything.
Yeah.
It starts to lull.
Yes,
I don't give a fuck.
It does.
in the context of the film, I don't need him stopping off at that French plantation before he gets to Kurtz. Because it kills all the momentum.
Don't even know what you're talking about. I don't think I've ever made it that far.
Oh God, well, there's like a 25-minute scene at a French plantation deep in Cambodia.
Okay.
And it's much like the Playboy Bunny scene that is earlier when he finds them. It's an interesting scene.
Sure.
Shouldn't be in the fucking
It should
movie.
Be an either-or type thing.
Yeah.
If you're going to do this, don't do something else.
Yeah, so...
Yeah,
it's one of those things, like, I love watching that as a deleted scene.
Yeah,
but
sure.
No, the final Dossier version, I don't like because it messes with... And again, it's probably because I grew up with the original cut.
Yeah.
And I fucking adore the original cut. And that's one of those films where the story of the making of the film is just as interesting. Have you... You've watched...
Oh,
the,
yeah. No,
The Hearts of Darkness is amazing.
The triple feature that you can... Well, triple feature. Yeah, the triple pack that you can get when you buy it on Vudu is both cuts and The Heart of Darkness.
For those of you who don't know, Heart of Darkness was a documentary that was made using the footage of... Francis Coppola's wife.
It's bonkers.
During the filming of that. Because, I mean, that film took, for like, years to make. Sets were destroyed. Martin Sheen had a heart attack. Fucking Brando showed up, like, 60 pounds overweight and not wanting to do shit.
Yeah.
Just every, like...
Fat Brando.
But yet, because of Fat Brando, he is filmed so wonderfully in that film. Where he's legitimately terrifying.
Yes.
And you never really see him full on for most of those shots.
Most of the time, it's just he's just kind of sitting there.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's
weird, shiny face and head.
I mentioned it to you when I texted you about this in Godfather 1. The scene where he goes and sees Sonny on the slab.
Yeah.
They massacred my boy. The acting he does with his eyebrows in that fucking scene are like, yep, give him the Oscar.
Yeah, that's. I mean, to me, that's the best scene. That's one of the best scenes in cinematic history.
Yeah.
You know, to each their own, but to me it is.
No, I can't disagree with you on that.
Now,
because it's a scene where that could have been, like, way overplayed. Oh my god, look at my boy! And then he starts throwing shit around the room.
You mean like when What's-Her-Name dies at the end of 3?
Yeah, exactly.
When Pacino goes full Pacino?
Yeah.
Watching the first one, when I was watching it, the other thing that happens to me is like, why couldn't he just have been that instead of turning into a parody of himself at some point?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because this week he finally admitted that his character in Heat was meant to be coked up. Like, he'd never really talked about that, but his cop...
Oh, I thought it was just assumed.
Yeah, I always assumed, but he finally came out and said, no, this guy's meant... Because he's never shown using drugs.
Either that, or Pacino was.
Yeah. Probably a little bit of both.
Probably a lot of both.
But yeah, that would be another one of those movies that I think would be... It's amazing how often those two actors appear on, like, my top lists.
Yeah, sure.
Not for anything... The past 20 years.
No.
But.
De Niro still does good stuff every once in a while, but Al Pacino, I can't take him seriously anymore.
Donnie Brasco, man.
Yeah.
He was fucking the bomb in
Brasco. Every once in a while, the talent comes through, and he gets when he gets the right roles and stuff, but.
People also don't say no to Pacino.
Right.
I don't think you're making a good choice there, Al. You're coming across kind of insane.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he was just a hint of Nick Cage before Nick Cage.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing is, he got rewarded for it.
Yes.
Because that's what got him the Oscar, was Scent of a Woman.
Yes,
one of his worst performances I've ever seen.
I was just going to say, like, Scent of a Woman is like, because that was one that I watched way after it had gotten all its accolades and stuff, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie, and he gives a bonkers, over-the-top performance. Nuanced.
It's
it
a
isn't.
Cartoon character.
It is.
It might as well have been named Mr. Magoo.
Yeah.
I was watching.
I just had a hoo-ah to everything.
Yes.
Sure. Go ahead, Al.
And then the ultimate is Devil's Advocate.
But see, that's
the ultimate.
But at least that's in a film that's not taking itself as seriously.
Yes. That's not Oscar bait.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy that film. But
oh my god.
No, I do. I enjoy it because it's insane.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But yeah.
Taking Keanu Reeves seriously as a brilliant lawyer is tough for me.
Oh yes, very much so.
Not as hard as it for me to believe that he is a 19th century Englishman.
Yet another Coppola film.
Oh, that's
Dracula.
Right. Oh,
Dracula is Coppola. See, Coppola. Let's do a quick IMDb of Coppola.
God,
wanna?
I guess
because. His is a career of such fucking bizarre extremes. Because, again, I love Coppola because he bankrupted himself numerous fucking times in the 70s for his art.
Yeah.
He's like, I am making this fucking movie. It's going... I will put up my own money. I don't care. And it's ruined him financially many times. Like, American Zoetrope, his company, went under like every other year, it seemed like. But he's got such a great IMDb history that fades into just, you're fucking kidding me, he made this.
Like, work for hire. Where do you want to start?
Well, this is all producing. Yeah. He's produced way too much shit.
Okay. Oh, yeah, he slapped his name on a bunch of shit.
Yeah, well, it was cool, though, because he directed both The Terror and Dementia 13, which were Roger Corman films. Like, low budget horror films, but it's what he got his, you know, it's what he cut his teeth on.
Well, wouldn't that have been, not specifically in those things, but around that time when they were doing those things where he and Spielberg and Lucas were kind of all young film nerds
together. Yeah, and De Palma. Yeah, because, like, I remember, like, they held the casting call for Carrie and Star Wars at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they were seeing the same actresses for both the role of Leia and Carrie. Because everybody was just friends. Yeah, and
swap those and think about it.
Yeah.
Sissy Spacek as Princess Leia.
They made the much better choice. I love Sissy Spacek as Carrie. She's perfect.
Although a Carrie Fisher Carrie would have been hilarious.
Yes.
Especially if they were like, do as many drugs as you want before you get to set. She'd be like, all right, boss.
You got it. I mean, we might as well start with,
although, like, she was like 19 then, so maybe not.
We might as well start with The Godfather, because prior to that, it's all low-budget, no-name films, which is amazing that he was able... I mean, it's part of the lore of The Godfather, too, is, like, he was almost fired on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Like, he was almost fired for wanting to cast Pacino. He was almost fired for wanting to cast pretty much everybody that he cast. Well, everyone was like, no, you can't cast him, because they wanted, like, Redford and shit.
You think there's a lot of studio notes now.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, he was they talk about him being frustrated at, like, let me make the fucking movie instead of wanting...
Yeah, well, just the fact that the studio wanted Redford and, like, Ryan O'Neal and all these, like, blonde-haired, blue-eyed actors to play this shit.
He still got, like, two non-Italians to play vital roles. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
James Caan ain't fucking Italian. Neither's Brando. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
So Italians were upset about that.
Yeah. Thankfully, though, you did get Duvall as his Kraut Mick friend, as the producer called him.
Yes.
Let me make it clear to you, my Kraut Mick friend. I'm just like, Jesus. And it's funny, because that guy is essentially Robert Evans.
Yeah.
Who was one of the producers on the film. So it's not like Francis was playing it cool, either.
Robert Evans, his face was plastic for... Is he still alive?
No. Great documentary made
about him,
though. It
wouldn't surprise me if he was, though.
I honestly don't know 100%. Because I don't think he is.
He probably looks... He looked the same for most of his life with that frozen, paralyzed face of his.
Yeah, because if you ever get a chance to either read the book or see the documentary, The Kid Stays in the Picture, it's amazing hearing the stories. Because, like, the story he's talking about with Johnny Fontaine,
it's
the best piece of ass I ever had, and he took her, he ruined her. That's essentially, I mean, that's based on Sinatra.
Oh, yeah.
Because the role he's talking about is Sinatra in From Here to Eternity.
Yeah.
But that happened to Robert Evans later in life with Steve McQueen, because he was with... Robert Evans was fucking Ally Sheedy. Not Ally Sheedy. Ally McGraw.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ally Sheedy would have been weird.
Yeah. And McQueen basically stole her from him. And yeah. But yeah, that Francis was ballsy just by even poking fun at Robert Evans in the film Evans was helping produce.
Yeah.
Evans was a huge power player back then.
Was any of that in the book? I don't remember.
I cannot remember that much.
I mean, I'm sure he molded it to fit more closely to what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I think it was still like a producer and shit, but it wasn't. This is definitely Robert Evans.
Yeah, they wanted to fire Pacino right up until the restaurant scene. Yeah. And then they were like, oh, that's what he's doing.
Because he doesn't really talk a whole lot, and he's definitely, and that's one of the reasons I love him in this, he is so understated throughout the entire film.
Yeah. Something he
should have stuck
lost
with.
The ability to do. He ran out of that juice.
Yeah. It's tough to match Pacino in the 70s. Like, literally only De Niro can do it.
Yeah.
But Pacino had so many good movies in that time, and he comes across through many other films in the 70s that make my... the 70s is my favorite film decade, because...
Sure. You must be a big Serpico guy.
I love fucking Serpico. I love Serpico so much that I love the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode where they made... Charlie became Serpico. No, I love... Yeah, Sidney Lumet... Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico, fucking, was it Lumet who directed All the President's Men?
No. You're thinking of Network.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you had...
All the President's Men is a guy I'd never heard of, because I specifically looked, and I was like, I don't know, I meant to look him up.
But the 70s is full of, like, auteur filmmakers making films that this day and age would make about 10 million.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, you're right.
But yeah, so he goes from The Godfather. Can you pull IMDb back up? Oh, yeah. I think he goes straight into 2 after this. I can't remember.
The Conversation's in between.
Oh, The Conversation was in between. Actually, yeah, because Conversation Godfather 2 came out the same year.
Yes.
Because he was nominated twice for Best Director and twice for Best Picture that year. And one for The Godfather Part 2, rightfully so. But The Conversation is an amazing film.
Well, and the
film.
Weird thing, that the thing I was watching last night, it was, and it was Coppola saying it. He said, I was shocked that it got nominated because the reviews were bad for 2.
Oh, I'm sure they were. It's one of those things where everybody loved the first. Of course, there's going to be backlash on
it.
Yeah. But the Conversation, some of Gene Hackman's best early work, right after like French Connection, and William Friedkin, another '70s auteur that was making all these awesome movies.
Alan Pakula.
Oh, Alan Pakula. He's Pacula? Done good stuff. He's
hey,
done some good stuff.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, he's another one that's done some really good films,
but you've never heard of him,
and some weird stuff.
Yeah, I like mini IMDb on Alan Pakula. Is that what it is? Pelican Brief, Presumed Innocent. I like both of those movies. Yep. All the President's Men, Sophie's Choice. Was he directed that?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Clute. Clute was actually really good. If you've never seen Clute,
what's Clute?
Clute is Jane Fonda playing a prostitute,
is that Donald Sutherland?
And Donald Sutherland playing the cop who's trying to keep her safe and kind of falls for her. Parallax View also
he
really
directed
good.
Kill a Mockingbird
and Fear Strikes Out. If you've never seen Fear Strikes Out, Fear Strikes Out's awesome. Jimmy Pearsall from the Red Sox.
I have not seen that. I have seen To Kill a Mockingbird many times.
Yes,
I have never seen Clute. Mm-hmm. This is the same kind of thing when I saw when I realized how many things the guy that directed the first Cat movie had done.
Oh, yeah, he'd been making films forever.
And, like, huge, big-budget blockbusters. And, how have I never heard of this guy?
Yeah, because he just kind of stayed under the radar, never directed anything big enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was always, oh, that movie's good, but you don't attach it to a person.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because maybe he doesn't have a style.
No, he doesn't.
And, I mean, looking at these are, a lot of his later stuff is all kind of legal drama type stuff. You mm-hmm. can still throw, Presumed Innocent, Pelican Brief, and All the President's Men in the same category.
Yeah.
I don't know what See You in the Morning is. I don't know what Rollover is.
I had never even heard of Dream Woman. Parallax View is another one of those really good, like, 70s thrillers, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like that. Starring, other 70s guy.
More Gregory Peck. Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Before we got sidetracked by that, what were we talking about?
We were talking about The Conversation.
Ooh,
and,
it is 1 o'clock, meaning that the random draft order should be completed. So I'll see if, while we're doing this. Oh, we're doing Coppola.
Yeah.
So after Godfather Part 2, he does Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, and notice the gap in years there. Like, that's a 3-year gap.
Well...
Yeah, and almost all of that was spent making Apocalypse Now, which, like, people just assumed that film was going to be dead when it landed, because everything went so wrong. But that film, I mean, it truly drove Coppola fucking insane. Like, absolute batshit for a while.
Well, yeah, it's got a weird, I mean, we already spoke about the issues, behind the scenes, but it has kind of a weird, almost like the same kind of aura that is around Poltergeist, that there was some, like, weird shit going on.
Yeah,
like
sets getting destroyed constantly. Yeah. And not only that, I mean, it's a film about losing your mind as you search for the truth.
Yeah. It's
art imitating fucking life, man, completely.
Let's see. All right, the draft room is open, so I'll pop it open and see if we've got... if the draft order's up. So, Apocalypse Now, after that...
One from the Heart, which was his musical.
Oh, you got it up? Good.
Yeah. Which was actually...
Wait, there's a musical?
He's got a couple.
I did not know that.
This and The Cotton Club.
Did not know that.
Good films. Good films, but not what people were looking for.
I'm picking third. I never pick high. I'm excited.
But yeah, the Cotton Club, when we get to that, Cotton Club's fucking awesome. But then he did his young adult novel films. When
guess
he
who
did...
picks first?
Who?
PLP Dan.
Nice!
You oh, son fuck. Of the pressure.
It is a lot of pressure. You pick first. So in the two drafts that you're in with me, you're picking first and second. I'm picking third. It's the highest I've ever drafted in any league, and I'm in like three leagues a year. I never am high.
Oh, God. I'm like, I've got the fucking meat sweats all of a sudden. I'm like, oh, man.
So you are picking first. Nick is picking second. I am picking third. And then I don't know who that is. And our friend Rob picks five. I'm not trying to dismiss someone. I just don't know whose team it is, because it's just listed as a team name. Because I know someone named their team the Dairy Clowns. Very clever. But I don't remember which one it was. And then it's Rob, and then I think this one is Liam at six, and then Goose at seven. So father, son, right middle of the draft. They're gonna be battling it out all day long. I don't know what that is, and then
Mike Hodgkins. I know Mike.
Is ninth, and then I don't know what that is at 10. This is, I believe, Nick's friend Kyle at 11, and then TJ gets the 12-13, which people don't like the 12-13. I actually do. Mm. I like the, as long as you understand that you have to reach.
Yeah.
The idea that you can get two guys back-to-back is appealing to me. But I'm happy with my three. So back to that. We'll talk more sport in about 45
minutes.
Coppola
did his S.E. Hinton batch with both the Outsiders and Rumblefish, which those, like, the Outsiders was essentially like the Avengers of actors at that time. Because, I mean, just listen to this cast. C. Thomas Howell, Matt Dillon, yeah. Ralph Macchio, Patrick Swayze, Rob Lowe, Emilio Estevez, Tom Cruise, Diane Lane. I mean, that's...
Well, I want to actually talk about how it's awesome that you brought that up, because I want to talk about how Saving Private Ryan was kind of the Avengers of that era,
yep.
And none of them ended up coming, except for Matt Damon,
mm-hmm.
None of them
were names at that point.
But they all were, it was all going to be, these guys are going to be huge stars, and the only one that really is Vin Diesel.
Yeah,
and Matt Damon.
Yeah,
but
all the rest are good character actors.
Yes, but everyone, when that movie came out, it was like, oh my God, Adam Goldberg is going to be a star.
Yeah, Giovanni Ribisi.
Gary, I mean, now
Gary
he,
Pepper.
Now all of these guys have had very nice careers. Yeah. I checked on all of them. They're all still working. They're still okay.
Adam Goldberg always shows up in the weirdest shit, but I love him whenever he does show up.
I've never seen Sneaky Pete, but I guess it's really good. Mm-hmm. That's Giovanni Ribisi's show. Yeah. Ed Burns.
Both of those guys had turns on Friends, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then
Ed Burns, everyone thought was going to be huge, because he wrote and directed, like, three very low-budget films, which are all really good.
Right.
The film Brothers McMullen is awesome.
Yeah.
And that came out of nowhere. That was, like, that was the era of Sundance, where, like, writer-directors like him, Kevin Smith, Richard Linklater, you know, all these guys were writing and directing their own very, very low-budget films and getting noticed because of Miramax.
Right.
Say what you will about Harvey Weinstein orgasming in potted plants.
I know.
He championed all... There would not be the independent scene of films if it were not for him, which sucks to have to say.
Well, I'm kind of embarrassed that I'm failing to think of who is it that says this all the time, but someone that I follow or someone that I listen to often is always preaching nobody is ever just one thing.
Yeah.
You don't know. Oh, it's a guy on a video game podcast that I listen to, because he says it all the time, and he says it all the time. That's why it sticks with me, because he says I live my life by that. You know, when I hear someone do something really bad, because when he was responding, because he works for IGN, and when he was responding to the allegations of the plagiarism stuff, he said, "Hold on, calling this hauler to me. I'm flying solo parenting for right now. Tilly and Robin are on a play date. Hold on." All right, we're back.
See, that could have gone terribly weird, because whenever your child leads off with, "I'm watching this really weird video on YouTube."
That's
I'm
why
like,
I paused.
Oh God,
I was like,
happened?
What is he going to say? Yep. Colin's watching a weird video where all the dialogue and singing is dog barks.
Yeah.
Okay. What was I talking about?
Weinstein and Miramax and everything.
Oh, not everyone is just one thing. And anyway, this guy, it's Justin Davis, he tweeted out, he said, this is just another example of, you know, nobody is just one thing. Like, this guy on the outside was a great guy, and he was, you know, happy to be working there, and he was just like the rest of them, but it turns out he's a fucking dirtbag that steals stuff from people. It's the same thing with Harvey Weinstein in reverse. He did horrible things. for decades.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean that he didn't also, like you said, champion a lot of low budget.
Like 1995 to 2005. Yeah.
There was
those were the Miramax years. Like they were a player in the Best Picture category every year. And they put out, like, when I worked at the video store, because I worked at the video store right around, like, 97 to 2001, 2002. If a movie came in with a Miramax logo on it, I watched it.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
I watched it, because I knew if it might not be great, but there's going to be at least something interesting in it.
Yeah.
They eventually got watered down after that.
Yeah,
they had to stay afloat, so they just kept...
Yeah, it just got to be too much. But yeah, for a while there, when you saw the Miramax logo, it was like you associate that in your brain with a quality movie.
Yeah, if you've never read the books, I suggest our listeners could read them. I cannot remember the authors at the moment, but Spike, Mike, Slackers, and Dykes.
Okay.
Which is about kind of like the early to mid-90s independent scene. Spike Lee, he's the Spike from the Spike, Mike, Slackers, and Dykes.
Sure.
Richard Linklater. It's
clearly.
And then there's another book called Rebels on the Backlot. Which is all about the emergence of, like, the Tarantino era.
Yeah.
Phenomenal, like, you know, film history books on what it was like in those times. Wish I could remember who wrote them at the moment. I could probably look it up. I'm just choosing not to.
We do have Google machines in front of us, but who wants to? Who wants to bother? Are we still going through Coppola, or do you want
to... We can, because I want to get to his weird shit real quick.
Okay, so like, we stopped at, what, Rumblefish?
Yep, and then he did The Cotton Club, which was about the Cotton Club in New York City, a historical film, way over budget. This one kind of killed him for a while, and it's going to show based on the movies he starts to do next. He did the Captain EO Michael Jackson short film.
Don't even know what that is.
Then he did Peggy Sue Got Married.
Peggy Sue Got Married's awesome.
It is. It is, but it's not a Coppola film.
No, it is not. But it's an awesome movie.
Then he did, like, Gardens.
Ooh, I know what I was going to say. When we were talking about Scent of a Woman, and kind of along the same lines, a movie that I was reminded of last night that is awesome when I was going through Brando's IMDb, that is, I would have never thought of this movie again, that is fucking awesome, is The Freshman.
Oh, yeah, Freshman was great.
I had totally forgotten about it. It was one of those things where when I saw it, like, I felt my heart jump. I was like, oh my God, I had totally forgotten about that movie. That movie is wonderful.
Yep, that is a great
And film. Now I remember every second of it.
Yep.
With the fucking, the exotic animals. And, what is it, a Komodo dragon that he's...
And you know that was his.
Oh my God.
That wasn't written into the script, I don't think, at first.
I think I'm going to look up the UPC symbol and disk to digital it. Because I love that. I love that movie.
Yeah, he did Peggy Sue Got Married, Gardens of Stone, Tucker the Man in His Dreams, and a short segment in New York Stories, which is actually really good, before hopping back in 15 years later to The Godfather Part 3.
Did you do that on purpose?
What?
Hopping back in. Tried to get out.
And they pulled him back in. Yeah,
but
I mean,
Peggy Sue pulled him back in.
He did like three films there in a row that were just not Coppola films, but he had to get some juice back before he could do The Godfather 3, which... Because on his name and the name of the film alone, got an Academy Award nomination for Best Picture.
Wait, which one are we talking about?
Godfather 3.
Oh, yeah. That movie sucks. I'm sorry.
It has some moments.
Yeah, sure it does.
But then for every one of those, there's Zaza! You know?
I don't like Andy Garcia in that movie.
No. And I like him a lot, but I don't like him in that.
I fucking hate him in that
movie. Even, like, Joe Montana is kind of annoying in that film.
Well, it's all like... Well, I feel like every character in The Godfather 3 is like a... watered down caricature of someone that would have been in the first two movies.
Yeah.
It's almost like, hey, Andy, we need you to act like someone who would have been in the first two. And he's like, yeah, got it.
Oh, basically Sonny. Act because he's Sonny's bastard. So act like you think Sonny would have. No, it doesn't work. And this is a film where Michael is trying to become, finally, you know, legit.
Yeah.
And you can't have that without Tom Hagen. You can't.
No. What was the reasoning behind
Duval? Duval didn't want to do it.
All right, that works. It doesn't surprise me, but that always kind of... I guess, I never cared enough to really look into it, but... Yeah, it doesn't... I don't know. Yeah, too many people have died off camera or left the fold off camera. There was also... if Coppola had a weak spot, it would be his penchant for nepotism.
Yes.
Talia Shire is the weakest part of the first two movies... His daughter is the weakest part of the third movie.
His daughter won the Razzie for best actress, if I remember, or worst actress, if I remember.
Wonderful director.
Yes.
But
yeah,
she can't act.
Yeah.
It's a good, she's where she should be now behind the camera.
Yeah, much better director. Then he did Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is a huge film at the time. Some questionable
casting choices in that as well. I was very disappointed with that movie.
It's a gorgeous film, and Gary Oldman is fucking phenomenal.
I so badly wanted that movie to be amazing. Tom Waits as Renfield
was a great choice. Anthony Hopkins is a good choice. That's where the good choices end.
Keanu Reeves fucking kills it. Like, it just, you can
be kind of... Winona Ryder's not much better.
No. But at least she can pull off a bit of an accent.
And Lucy was not good. The actress who played that character for like 6 seconds.
You can be. You can even start to like get kind of pulled into that movie, and then all of a sudden Keanu Reeves talks, and you're like, "Nope."
Yeah, exactly.
It's fucking Bill and Ted.
Yeah,
He sounds like. Yeah, it's.
Well, it's funny because it's a film. It's, you know, his character is supposed to be a man above his over his head who can't do anything right.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what you want the actor to be doing.
Right.
And that for a while, kind of sent him Coppola spiraling again, because then he made Jack, which was not a good film.
What's Jack?
It's the one with Robin Williams where he plays like an overgrown kid.
Okay.
You know. Shit.
Is that Work?
Work Text.
That's no good.
No, because I'm not on call. I'm the on call of the on call.
There you go.
We're training, so.
What are we talking about? I'm just looking at draft stuff. My focus is not with Coppola right now.
Well, then he directed The Rainmaker, which was another one of those
not good 90s
Grisham films.
There are really only two good Grisham
then
films.
Then he went and started making his own shit again, none of which have been any good.
I've never heard of any of
Twixt.
Them.
None of those. Twixt was not good at all.
I've never heard of any of them.
None of them are good. I have not seen. I have not seen Tetro, so I can't really speak to that too much. Baby Driver's in it.
But Alden.
Iron.
Oh,
yeah. But yeah, no, none of those films were good. And I don't know it doesn't even have anything listed for him, like, working on now. Like, Distant Vision in 2000. Oh, Distant Vision is a live cinema production that was broadcast to a limited audience from UCLA.
The Freshman has a Criterion.
No fucking way.
Yeah. Fucking way.
That's amazing.
I'm going to try to get the UPC for it. Because I did learn that if you get the UPC for a special edition, you get the special edition features. Because my Godfather has, like, 20 featurettes on it.
Yep.
Wait, that's it's not the right one. It's some other Freshman. It's some different Freshman.
Well, that's why I was surprised. I'm like, the Freshman cut it? I mean,
hey, but
Armageddon.
All bets are off once you told me Armageddon has a Criterion, so anything can. If Michael Bay has a Criterion movie, then anyone can have one.
Still, you got to find the Freshman and watch that.
Yeah,
I I wanted to know because I haven't seen that in fucking forever. But yeah, Coppola.
If you don't know what The Freshman is, it's Marlon Brando and Matthew Broderick. And actually, I didn't really think of it until just now. Is it Bruno Kirby? Is that his name? That was Clemenza in the first one?
Yeah.
He's in that movie, too. Yeah. So it's funny that Clemenza is also in this one because...
Come on, what was Abe Vigoda doing?
In The Freshman, the whole shtick of the movie is that Brando is basically playing Vito Corleone again.
Well, just because it came out the same year as The Godfather 3.
Yeah. Only he's legit. Or, yeah. Actually, sorry, spoilers for The Freshman.
Frank Wally was in that? And Joe Polito! Joe Polito's one of those guys that's just in, like...
Yeah.
He's in, like, 8 million Coen Brothers films.
Yeah.
He's always, like, that guy.
More work texts.
No, this one's an easy one.
So your top 50 thing. I guess we've narrowed to where do you come down on Private Ryan and All the President's Men?
Well, only the top 10 are ever set in stone.
Sure.
And even then, it can change a little bit because like God, Empire Strikes Back and Godfather will always be number one and number two. Those are. Set
I'm sorry.
In stone.
Say that again.
Empire Strikes Back and the Godfather. Let's see. Saving Private Ryan. I've got listed in amongst, like, the 30s, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
After that, I was just trying to, like... What I was trying to do with this list was I was trying to only name, like, one film from each director that I really, really love. If...
Yeah.
Like, there will not be... I mean, I think a couple of the directors, like, probably have one or two on here.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, it's like, okay, I could have named, you know, Coppola's first fucking five films.
Yeah. Sure. Well, oh, sure. Yeah, after, yeah.
From Godfather to Apocalypse Now, I could have named them all.
Yeah.
And they would have easily made a top 10 that people wouldn't have complained about. All the President's Men, I think I have, like, in the 40s or 50s. But, yeah, this is just one of those things where it's, like, every time I watch a film, I'm like, oh, yeah, I need that, I need... Like, eventually this will be a top 100, and then I'll actually really organize it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, every once in a while I'll just come across a film and be like, oh, yeah, that should be on my list. I gotta put that on my list. And then I will put that on my list.
See, on my... I don't have it written down. I don't have it documented anywhere. But on my list in my head, I do struggle with the, you know, putting even a movie from 1999 on the same kind of list. Although, I think you can consider Saving Private Ryan a classic at this point. I still have a little bit of trouble putting those in the same thing. I know that All the President's Men is not, you know, considered the same way that The Godfather is. But to me it is, because I've said a million times, I really like journalism movies. Mm-hmm. I've always had... It's one of those things, not the same as a pro athlete. Like, I'd really love to be able to do that, but I'm not obviously not talented enough.
Yeah.
But in a way, it is. Like, I really respect what, like, investigative journalists do.
Mm-hmm.
I could never do it.
Yeah.
Never do that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I and I'm fascinated by it. There's a reason that if I were to make a top 10, there would be three journalism movies in it, probably.
Well, it's not also, I mean, David Simon is, like, one of my fucking heroes.
Yeah.
Journalist.
Yeah.
It's like I have two journalist friends who, like, one of them we talk about Hemingway.
Yeah.
The other we talk about David Simon.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, they're wonderful people, but it's like, part of the reasons we became friends is I'm like, you're a journalist that gets it.
Yeah.
Because I get interviewed all the time.
Sure.
For my work.
Sure.
And there are some journalists that just come in and I'm like, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
You are here to be on camera.
Right.
And that's all you want.
You
want
to be seen.
You want to be seen. I gave you a fucking brilliant story.
Yeah.
And you wasted it.
Yeah.
You used like two sound clips that were complete fluff.
Yep.
And most of the stuff that I said, or one of the kids that you interviewed said, you ended up saying it on camera instead of them. Which to me makes you a shit journalist.
Yes.
If you have the opportunity to use...
Don't be the story.
Yeah, exactly. That's like rule number one. Don't put yourself in the story. And if you're reading the words that someone just spoke to you on camera, I'm fucking done with you as a journalist. You're shit. I don't care.
Hashtag plagiarism.
Yeah. Whereas, like, my friend Nick and my friend Callie, like, when I talk with Callie, we're often not even talking about what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, she came and she did the Park story, which I'm giving her shit now. I don't know if you read it in the BDN, my story about how we're working to rejuvenate.
Read your shit.
We're working to rejuvenate Second Street Park. And one of the kids wants to put, and this is a quote from the kids, a cutesy woodland creature mural on it.
Okay.
So, of course, she used that in the story. I'm talking about, you know, the sociological aspects of what we're trying to do, this and this. And also, we're trying to paint a cutesy mural.
Yeah.
So the next day, after the story printed, I was in a sex trafficking meeting. Full of people I've known forever. And so I was sitting there talking, and then one of the lady who runs the Hope Rising sex trafficking shelter, so she said, cutesy, huh? And I'm like, oh. So then, like, everybody in the room, everything, because this is what we do. What we do at the beginning of these meetings is we go around and we talk a little bit about what our agency is doing.
Yep.
I went kind of in the middle. Everyone after me at that point had to insert the word cutesy into what they were doing, and everyone's like, "You've lost all street cred, Dan. You can't show your face in Pickering Square anymore. Cutesy. Thought you were tough. Tattoo. Do you have a cutesy tattoo?" And I'm just like,
"She said maybe I do. It's on my cock.
I actually have a butterfly, so I do." But. But yeah, so
My Tilly is definitely qualifies as cutesy.
But like when we were talking about that story, we're talking about 8 million underlying things.
Sure.
It wasn't just, oh, you're trying to clean the park, that's adorable. It was like, you know, we're talking about broken window social theory, we're talking about, you know, youth ownership, we're talking about all this shit.
Yeah.
Barely any of it made it into the actual story.
Right.
But I love that she's always looking for those aspects of it to inform the story. instead of honestly, that's the difference between a print journalist well, and a news journalist most of the time.
And probably a lot of that's not on her. I mean, as far as what ends up being
final. Yeah, exactly. As she puts it, blames everything on the editor.
Yeah, well, and rightfully so.
Plus, she's a relatively new journalist.
Yeah, so. It's not. I mean, I don't know this person. I don't know her. What her work environment is, but I'm guessing just not. She has no option. You know,
well, it's a low selling paper in the state of Maine. You know, their jobs are always in danger.
Yeah. So I keep jumping back to this, my part five, because it keeps popping into my head. But the other two, if I lump the Godfather movies together, you know, so as not to clog it with that, especially if I'm just keeping it to five, as far as like classic type movies, those types of movies, for me, I pretty easily can go Godfather, Saving Private Ryan, and All the President's Men. Mm-hmm. The two that I want to put there that I struggle with is one is because it's a genre film, and the other one is very recent. Mm-hmm. I really want to put the Two Towers in there.
I have the trilogy. I did put the Lord of the Rings trilogy on. That's high on my list. But sorry, that's great fucking filmmaking.
It is.
You can't not get caught up in the Two Towers.
Yeah.
When those fucking battles are happening, and when Gandalf fucking rides up over the
fuck yeah, man.
Yeah, you can't not get caught up in that.
And the other one is because it's so recent is Spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
I can watch Spotlight at any time.
Yeah.
And it's the same for me.
Yeah.
That movie's amazing.
Yeah. My current one that I always kind of like, I don't know if I should put it down because it's so current, but The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
For the problems that film has, every
there
time...
There aren't many.
There aren't many, but there's a few here and there where I'm like, I kind of wish he spoke a little different.
Oh, that goes throughout, though.
Yeah.
I never agreed with that choice.
But, like, every time Heath Ledger's on fucking screen, I'm like, nope, this is top 10.
Yeah.
Every fucking time he's on there. Let's see what else do I have on there for like.
And the rest of that cast is really like Aaron Eckhart is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
LA Confidential is one of my always on there. Good Will Hunting is one of my always on there. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
How far apart were they? 2 years apart?
Which ones?
LA Confidential 95 ish.
97 because it lost to Titanic.
Same year? Oh, Good Will Hunting was
97. Yeah, I think it might have been.
Were
the
they
same
all
year.
The same year?
Yeah, 97 was a pretty decent year.
97
for what ended up winning all the Oscars.
1997 was 1997 was 2015 before 2015.
Yeah,
if you're familiar with chronology.
See, I still think 1999 is like one of the best years ever.
Oh yeah,
99 was amazing. The Thing I've got on there, Full Metal Jacket.
I haven't seen Full Metal Jacket in forever.
But it's weird because that's only on this top list for the first half of the film.
Oh no,
the second half is still
once they
fine.
Get to Vietnam, it's boring.
It's okay. Well, enjoy it, but it's not... Once Vince D'Onofrio blows his fucking head off, it's not the same.
Oh, yeah, I check out after that. Well, it's just a Vietnam movie. I mean, I don't say that with disrespect, especially considering a Vietnam War hero died yesterday.
Yeah.
It's every other Vietnam movie after that.
Yeah, exactly.
The part that makes that interesting...
And there are a lot of, like... Jeez, I didn't even realize...
Platoon.
I didn't even put Platoon on this list, and Platoon should be fucking on here somewhere.
Yeah.
Anything that can make something...
And we've talked about Apocalypse Now. Apocalypse Now is a very different Vietnam movie. Yeah. But yeah,
Apocalypse Now is on.
Full Metal Jacket is basically... at that time especially, not just overall in film history, but at that time, mid-80s, Vietnam movies were huge because...
Oh, yeah. Born on the 4th of July.
The group that were, you know, teenagers and whatever, they were making movies in the mid-80s, and that's what they...
Yeah, it's like why...
That was their experience.
Yeah, it's like why the early to mid-2000s we got a lot of Gulf War films.
Yeah, that's just that's the way...
Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah.
That's why now we're starting to get a lot of Afghanistan films. I mean, we're still fucking there.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, time has passed while we've been there, so...
Yeah, 17 years. Yeah.
Jaws is on this list. Raising Arizona. Fuck yeah.
That movie's funny.
Of all the Coen Brother films, that's the one I mean, Fargo is probably the better movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it is.
Especially from, like, a general, you know, this is how good movies are made, but fuck, I can't watch Raising Arizona without cackling through the whole fucking movie.
Well, it's...
It's good breakfast cereal you got here, Miss McDonough. It's just cereal flakes. It's good cereal flakes you got here, Miss McDonough.
Holly Hunter is a treasure to me.
Yes.
And that's... And Nick Cage, that is awesome, Nick Cage.
Yeah.
That's, well, actually, I should amend that. All Nick Cage is awesome, Nick Cage. It's just for different reasons.
Yes.
This is
he can act, Nick Cage.
This is he can act, and he's legitimately funny, Nick Cage.
Which reminds me, Shout Factory is putting out a Blu-ray of Valley Girls very soon, which was like, that was Discovery Nick Cage.
Right.
This was more than his, I picked my head up in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
Nick Cage. Ah. Add another one to Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Fucking love that film. Not on my list. See, this is why I have this list. For every once in a while when we talk about this shit, I'm like, oh yeah, that film exists and I love it.
Well, you should put The Freshman on there then. And be like, oh yeah, there's The Freshman.
I know, now I've got to go see that. And it's one of those that will probably be nearly impossible to find.
Oh, I'm sure. That's what I'm thinking. I'll see if you can...
I say that. I have the Google machines right in front of me. Let me see if Bull Moose has a copy.
Do you think it's even on...
it's on DVD, at least.
Yeah, but do you think is there a chance it's on Blu-ray?
I don't remember ever seeing it.
Because if it's on DVD, it's
Copy. Won't You Be My Neighbor available now on VOD?
I don't know, man. I'm not into it.
Oh, fuck, into the Mr. Rogers film that makes everyone fucking cry?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm just trying to figure out
Mr. Rogers documentary.
Okay, gotcha.
I know that's coming out soon. Wow, there's a lot of books named The Freshman. Available pre-owned. Where is it?
This.
Damn it!
Thing
sucks. Lewiston, Mill Creek, Salem, and Waterville.
Yeah, but they can...
I want to buy it tonight on my way home.
Gotcha.
Do I go to Waterville this week for anything? Because sometimes I have to go to Augusta for meetings, but I don't think I have any this week.
$10 on Voodoo. I can do better than that.
Yeah.
Especially if you buy the DVD and take a picture of the UPC and send it to me.
Yeah, I'll stop in at Bull Moose and have an order from Waterville.
Where are we at? We've got, we are 30 minutes to draft time. I will need, we need to wrap up soon because I need time to get out.
I need to figure out who I'm picking first.
Yeah, Danny's figuring out who's picking first. So this was a kind of a slap together, informal discussion of the...
Yeah.
Of some awesome movies that we watched. So if you are a person who has not watched older movies, especially if you are a younger audience member, or The Godfather and Godfather 2 are magnificent.
We should definitely do a 70s film-based episode.
Yeah.
I would love to do that, where we just pick like 10 to 15 movies from that era and just...
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I haven't watched The French Connection forever.
Well, we've talked about it briefly today, but I haven't seen The Conversation probably since high school, or maybe I probably watched it in college.
My friend and Nick's friend, Pete Lawrence, who used to work with me at KB Toys. Pete, if you ever listen to this, I want my fucking copy of The Conversation back.
I thought you were going to say he was in it, and I was like, wait, what?
No.
He can get you a copy.
He has my Criterion DVD of that I let him borrow about 14 years ago because he couldn't sleep. And he needed something to help him sleep. And I'm like, watch this.
And
it worked so well, he kept it and forgot to give it back.
I would have been... I probably would have been watching that around the time that I was watching The Godfather all the time. I would have... That's when I would have gone through. And that's around the time I would have tried to watch the whole Apocalypse Now and all that. Because I was in a little Coppola phase.
Is there a documentary there called Breaking 2 and it's not followed by Electric Boogaloo?
It should be.
What the hell? You can't name something Breaking 2 and then not have Electric Boogaloo. That's just wrong.
Well, it should be Break-In 2.
Yeah, come on, National Geographic.
You guys suck.
Yeah.
What are you reading? Anything?
I'm still working my way through Desperation.
Yep.
Trying to remember the main character. Because I'm like, I don't even remember, half the character's name still. It's a tough slog right now.
Yeah.
What's his name? David Carver or something is like the main character.
Sure.
I'm reading that. I started watching the TV show Letterkenny, which is just Canadian brilliance at its best. Small town hicks and fucking hockey players and goths.
You sort of described it. It's a more intelligent Trailer Park Boys. So I'm on
much
board
better,
for that.
Much better written Trailer Park Boys.
Because I don't care.
The dialogue crackles.
Yeah,
and it's played so straight. It would be like watching Mikey Witham fucking just. And no offense against Mikey, I adore Mikey, but it'd be like listening to him do one of Shakespeare's soliloquies. You'd just be like, no, this is not making sense in my head, but I'm loving it.
I am probably got a quarter of the drawing of three left. I'm in, right now Roland is inside the guy that eventually pushes Jake out into traffic.
Ah,
I'm in,
yes.
I'm there.
Yeah.
And I think, and Detta has, what's his name? What's his name? My God.
Eddie? Fuck?
Yes. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
I also started reading, do you know who Rick Wilson is? It's a political commentary.
Oh, yeah.
He used to be a Republican strategist. His book, the Everything Trump Touches Died. I started reading that two nights ago.
Great title.
It's hilarious. You'll have to take it after.
Yep. I will definitely borrow that.
Oh, my God. So anyway, we are going to stop here, and I'll post this kind of as...
yeah, a nice little quick episode.
Yeah.
115 chock-holes of movie nerdiness.
I think we can do this, especially during football season. We can do this every week. That way the people that want just football can listen to just football. The people that want the Francis Ford Coppola talk can listen to that.
Because in the Venn diagram circles, those don't always overlap.
They do not overlap. Did you see the one this week that was going around of the diagram was preachers, DJs...
yes, and something else.
And like...
Because, like, people that make you put your hands up.
Oh, my God. It was perfect. It was so fun.
There was another one. It's a four-way diagram about shows about smart people, shows that are smart, shows about stupid people, shows that are stupid.
Ooh, you're talking about
with
the circles?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, my buddy Asa posted that. It was hilarious.
Yeah, because it was right after... Oh, shit, we didn't even talk about this. Big Bang Theory is in its last season. They announced this is the last season.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And yeah, and everyone was like, about fucking time. And it was funny because I was following, my friend Joe put that, and it was amazing how many people were like, I didn't know everybody else felt this way too. Like, post was like, I have fucking hated this show.
Oh, God,
I don't understand its popularity. And I'm like, if only they'd been listening to us. We were talking about this shit like 3 years ago, people. I
hate that show with
still
a
have friends
passion.
At work that absolutely love that show.
Oh, there was like one person. I guess
you watch Big Bang last night? No.
I guess there was someone who took an episode and removed the laugh track.
Oh, it's
and that's when you realize that's just how mean-spirited that show is. It's like, if you don't realize you're supposed to be laughing, it's just a mean
it's
show.
It's the same joke over and over.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's every Chuck Lorre show. It's the same fucking joke over and over and over again. It's just...
Man. Well, that was the thing, too. It's like, people are like, Jim Parsons is finally free, because he's essentially playing like a guy in his mid-20s at 45.
Yeah.
Who has not progressed.
And Jim Parsons is a talented comedian.
His show's on Broadway. People
he
like,
does not need
love.
To be doing... I mean, again, I don't begrudge him a fucking thing. He's going to make... I think I've heard week that the Friends cast, each individual cast member from Friends makes $20 million a year just on syndication.
And this show will
$20 million
I mean, this
a
show's,
year.
And this show's been That's in syndication crazy. Already for like a decade.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, Jim's fine.
Yeah.
But to me, that's like all
Which
the more
good,
reason
the guy
to
who
bounce.
Plays like, what's his name? The Indian friend.
Yeah.
He's never going to do anything again.
No. But never has to.
No, Johnny Galecki will be fine. Guy who plays Howard Wallowitz. He was a comedian too, and he'll be a bit player in a bunch of stuff. But yeah,
And Kaylee Cuoco will be hot for a couple more years, and then she'll probably go away because
She's
not terribly talented. She's just very pretty.
Yeah.
And again, I don't begrudge anyone doing that, but to me, it's like that's all
I
the
do
more
not
reason.
Begrudge any of the new kids. They never have to work again in their entire lives. I'd do it.
Yep.
I'll sell out. But I can't dance, so.
After a while, they won't be able to either.
No, that's whatever.
Hey.
Wahlberg's got a Wahlberg, man.
You know
hey. That's right. He's always got Wahlbergers to fall back on.
That's right. I just heard about that this week.
Wahlbergers.
There was one other thing I was going to say, and I don't remember what the fuck it was. I guess it doesn't matter. Draft's in 20 minutes, so I got to wrap this up.
I already have my number 7 pick all picked out.
Do you? Mm-hmm. Where are you leaning?
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
What if they find out 3 hours from now?
I can guarantee you that David Johnson will not make it to you, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's not the number 7 rank, dude.
No.
If Julio's there at 7, I'm taking Julio. Period.
Over
Kamara.
No, but I mean obviously over several other receivers. You would take Julio over OBJ and Hopkins?
Well,
because they're both going to be there.
If they're there, well, I don't
know. Oh, they're definitely going to be there. Well, 7? At 7, the only receiver... AB might be there at 7.
No. Liam's taking him at 6.
Oh, he is?
If he's still there.
Yeah. Kikas, I have... I've done a bunch of mocks from... I should be recording this on the new episode, so I'm just going to pause here. Sorry for the fragmented end.
Yeah.
Bye, guys.
Bye.